I'm Richard van der Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 134 for the weekend starting 2 October 2015.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, where you'll find South Africa's best technology journalism.
That's right, Duncan. No headlines like printers that won't compromise your business security.
No, we don't sell our editorial space to advertisers. On Talk Central this week, we talk digital migration in the Northern Cape.
Also this week, we chat about Vodacom's new low-cost smart devices, and we chat about the new sports, live streaming, and VOD services.
Before we get to all of that, though, we need to pay the bills. We'll be back in just a moment.
Okay, my schnookums, I have to get back to work now.
Aw, but I'm going to miss you.
I'll miss you too, but I really have to go.
Okay, Poopsie, but you hang up first.
You hang up first, my little pumpkin pie.
No, you.
No, you.
No, you.
This is not a work call, but it is taking place at work, and you are paying for it. But with Voice Supreme from Vox Telecom, you get the best call rate at only 59 cents per minute, with per second billing. It's the perfect alternative to VoIP least cost routing. SMS 43255 and we'll call you back. Standard SMS rates, T's and C's apply.
Welcome to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
Very good, thanks. Can you believe it's the final quarter of the year, really?
Yeah, where has 2015 gone?
It gets faster every year, doesn't it? They say that as you get older...
Time goes faster.
Time goes faster, yeah. It certainly seems to be the case. Before we know, it's going to be Christmas.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get on to the week's tech news. I think this week, let's get started by talking about digital migration. And there's actually some good news there, although it's quite incremental, the development. But we finally got the digital migration process started. The communications minister, Faith Matambi, has begun the process of registrations for the distribution of government-subsidized free set-top boxes to a community called Kemus in the Northern Cape Province. This is inside the Square Kilometre Array Radio Telescope Zone, an area that needs to be migrated sooner than the rest of the country. In fact,
they're
going to switch off analogue broadcast in that area on the 1st of January next year. So they kind of have to move quite quickly.
A little quick, yeah.
Small as it is the first step in actually getting these devices into the hands of consumers and getting this digital migration process underway. So hopefully we're still going to see a commercial launch of digital TV beyond just this SKA zone before the end of the year. ETV has announced, or they haven't announced, I found out that they're now seeking leave to an application for leave to appeal the judgment that went against them in the encryption matter. So that could be heading back to court if the judge decides to grant them leave to appeal. Of course, they could, I guess, petition the Supreme Court of Appeal directly if they wanted to. Mm. The good news about the ETV application is that they haven't sought an urgent interdict again to stop the process. So the migration process can continue while the legal review is happening. Although, you know, given how long legal reviews take, even when they're brought on an urgent basis, they can take a long time. One wonders how many of these non-encrypted set-top boxes are going to be in the market by the time the judge makes a final decision. And by the time it eventually gets to maybe the Constitutional Court, the digital migration project will probably be over.
Yeah. Would it be uneconomical to then revert back? I think so.
But at least the project, which has been delayed by many years, is finally getting going. And let's hope this is the... There aren't going to be too many more obstacles in the way of getting this project done, because it's so important to get that spectrum in the hands of telecommunications providers.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, let's be honest, the delays for this thing is just kind of time wasting if you think about, you know, the people that in that square kilometre array, for example, that they need to get switched on as soon as possible, and that's just going to kind of see through the rest of the country. We need to get this up and running without any delays.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, I wanted to talk also about Vodacom's new low-cost smart devices. They held a press conference earlier this week to talk about these. I wasn't expecting much out of it. We saw them launch the Smart Kicker smartphone last year, which I think you reviewed. It came in the market at $499, which is very aggressively priced. It's now $599. It's gone up by 100 rand because of the weakening rand. But they've brought out four new devices, all developed by Vodafone in the UK. But very, very cool. Rechot's just taken out the Smart Ultra 6, which
looks a lot like a Galaxy, Samsung Galaxy.
It looks like a Galaxy, and also looks a bit like an iPhone, I think, especially at the top.
Yeah, a little bit, but I say it certainly looks more like Samsung devices. But
okay.
Beautiful build quality, right?
It's great build quality. It's a little plasticky on the back, but for the price, $3,199, you can't really complain.
Really good.
And it's it has an octa-core processor in it, and a full HD display.
Wow.
For $3,199, 16 gigabytes of storage, flash storage, micro SD card that supports cards of up to 128 gigabytes, and it's got a quite respectable 13 megapixel camera. So it's not junk.
No, it's not. and that's one of the things I liked about this, the range that Vodafone brought out last year. If you look at the tablet, I don't know what the model number is. This is the VF1296, it says at the back. But it is plastic, but it's a solid feel, you know. It's got a kind of a matte finish. It's not as heavy as what you would think it would be by looking at it. But this is certainly the kind of thing I can see myself walking around with.
It's a lovely little tablet. Beautiful. It hasn't got a Retina screen as you would imagine.
Yeah.
But for the price, you can't really complain. So that's the PowerTab 10 tablet. It has a 10.1-inch WXGA display with 10-point multi-touch, dual-core processor, 4,000 mAh battery, 2-megapixel main camera. Okay, you don't really need a camera on the tablet. 3G, so there's no LTE in it, for $1,799.
Oh, that's not bad.
That's not bad
at all. This will make a good Christmas present for sure.
Yeah.
Even this phone, I mean,
yeah.
What did you say, 3-1?
3-1, 3199, and it's got 4G LTE in it, and it's got a beautiful display, 1080p. It's I would say it's comparable to a top-end smartphone of 24 months ago.
Which is still good enough for probably 90% of the population, if you think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, you just need something that's powerful, this thing, obviously.
Yes, yes.
Very, very cool. And the others, I mean, it's just another one.
So the Smart Ultra 6 that you're looking at now, that's actually a contract made by ZTE. And ZTE has been putting out some pretty good devices lately. I was looking at their new Blade smartphone, ultra thin smartphone the other day. It looks pretty good. And these two other devices, I haven't had a chance to play with them yet. We've got the... which one have you got there?
This is the Smart Grand.
Smart Grand. Okay, that's just a large screen device.
So it's similar to the one from last year. It looks and feels similar, but this is still a very solid...
The
solid
Smart,
in hand.
The Smart Grand 6, that's a 5-inch FWGA display, quad-core processor, Android 5.1, 1800 mAh battery, 5-megapixel main camera, and 3G for 1,100 Rand.
Wow. That's impressive. That really is impressive. And are all these phones manufactured by ZTE or just...
I'm not sure. I haven't had a chance to look at those other ones, but certainly the Smart 6 Ultra is a ZTE phone. I actually noticed at the back, in tiny, it says made in China by ZTE. So does that one say anything?
No.
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 Could be made by Foxconn or one of those guys.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Just opening up the back here. No
reference. Okay. But pretty good for the price.
Very impressive.
And then the last phone they've introduced is, where is it? I've got it here. The Smart Speed 6. This is a 4G LTE device that costs 1,299 Rand. So Vodacom's claiming this is the cheapest 4G LTE device on the market in South Africa. It's also got an FWVGA display, quad-core processor, Android 5.1, micro SD card slot, 5-megapixel main camera, and 4G for 1,299. So I think these are pretty cool devices. I think these are going to all of these are going to sell very well.
Sell very well. Yeah. I mean, let's be honest with the rand-dollar exchange rate. Electronics aren't getting cheaper for us, and if you can get your hands on something like this, and they look very good build quality, and I'm very impressed.
Yeah, the Smart Ultra 6 is the one that I think is really going to do well.
Yeah,
at 3,200 rand for a full-featured high-end smartphone. That's got the same amount of storage on it than the entry-level iPhone 6S. It's pretty good going. And if you consider for an entry-level 6S, you're probably going to be paying north of 12 grand now with the rand exchange rate where it is.
Exactly. This makes a lot of sense.
Mm. The only criticism I guess I have of Vodacom is the fact that their data rates are still relatively high.
At 4G, you might...
At 4G, you may be burning through more than the value of the device quite quickly.
Yeah. Well, I'm very impressed. I'm definitely going to look forward to trying one of these out at some point, just to see how they do and work on a day-to-day basis.
Anyway, go check out... welcome to take one today. I mean, try the Smart Office.
I will.
That one, or take one of the other ones. But it's... I think that Smart Ultra 6 is going to do particularly well, given its... given its price point and its design. It really looks good. It really does look good.
They were very clever on making sure the price point is almost unbelievable in some ways. You go, what? Is that really the phone, the price? At first glance, at least.
And as I said in my review of this particular device, it's, you know, unless you're... you know, unless you need to be associated with a brand, unless you feel
brand conscious.
Yeah, if you aren't brand conscious, if you don't really care what device you're using, if you don't feel that you have to have a device in your pocket that has an Apple logo on it, for example, then this is an obvious contender.
Definitely, and
they come with a 24-month warranty as well.
Yeah, that's impressive. Yeah, look, I mean, walking around a phone like this, very few people are going to be able to distinguish this from a very cheap phone.
Yeah, exactly. It looks like a high-end phone.
Yeah, it does. Interesting. It'll be good. It'll be interesting to see how these sell over the festive period.
Mm.
Obviously, preloaded with a lot of Vodacom apps.
It does, but I'm pleased to report certainly on that Ultra 6, they're quite uninstallable as well. They're as system apps. You can just get rid of them.
Sure.
And a lot of them are junk, so you probably do want to get rid of them.
And the 13 megapixel camera, have you tried that?
I have. Not exhaustively, but I just took a couple of pictures around the place, and even in low light conditions, it seemed pretty good. I was just having a look now.
Just checking it. Yeah, 13 megapixels. I mean, certainly don't need more.
Very, very nice phone.
Yeah. No, I'll definitely play with that for a few days and see what it's like compared to my 13 grand iPhone 6. Thank you very much.
I'll tell you the one phone that I'm really looking forward to is the new Sony Xperia Z5 Premium.
Yeah,
have you seen that? Have you seen this?
I've heard about it. I haven't seen it. No.
Looks absolutely amazing. They've just started selling it on the Orange store. It's retailing for 12,100, I think. Well, that changes on a daily basis with the exchange rate. Let me just see if I can bring it up here quickly. Sony Premium. There we go. 12,200, and it really is a stunning looking phone. Let me just bring up the black version.
You were quite a big fan of the Xperia Z4 last year, weren't you?
Z3. They've gone straight from the Z3 to the Z5. It is a great phone, especially the battery life. It's solid 2 days, and they're promising the same with this. But the Z5 Premium has a 5.5-inch display with a 4K resolution, delivering a pixel density of 806 ppi.
Wowzers. What's the battery life like with that beast?
They're claiming it's going to be 2 days. It's got a 3,430 milliamp-hour battery, and just about everything else you could imagine, including a fingerprint sensor in the power button on the side of the phone.
Oh, nice. That's a good place to put it.
It is, yeah. Exactly where your thumb is. So I'm really looking forward to playing with this device.
But not officially available through the South African channels.
Not yet. I think the Z5 Compact, which is also a very popular phone, because of its size, and the regular Z5 are going to go on sale in South Africa in the next month or so. And I understand the Z5 Premium will be coming to this market either right towards the end of the year or early next year.
Nice.
But stunning looking phone, quite expensive though. Certainly compared to the
You can't compare these two price wise. I mean, this one will just knock it out of the water.
But then the Smart Ultra doesn't have a 4K display
for sure,
which is insane.
Insane. I would still argue that you probably won't need a 4K display.
No,
nice to have.
It's Sony's showing off, really.
Yeah.
I don't think you can. You probably can't even tell the difference between a 2K and a 4K display on a smartphone that size.
Yeah, no, I don't think you would. Unless your camera records in 4K, and then you'll be able to see some sharpness on screen.
And of course, this device's camera records 4K. Really.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
and plays nicely if you've got a Sony 4K TV.
Okay, no, of course, of course.
Which I don't. Which I don't. And I won't be tempted to buy
it. But you've got another 4K screen, so perhaps there's some synergies there.
Well, yeah, reviewing an LG phone. Sony, LG. Maybe they'll play together. Cool, so that's Vodacom's new low-cost devices. Did you see the news this week that Edward Snowden had joined Twitter?
Yeah, and I was his 185,000th follower, I think it was. I stopped counting at 182,000.
Okay, I think he hit a million in the first 24 hours, if I'm not mistaken. What's he on now?
I saw a video of a guy, I think it was Richard Mulholland, who posted a video of one of his friends sitting there tapping refresh on the screen, and with every refresh there was like 80,000 more followers.
Oh wow.
It was crazy. It's
1.25. okay, it slowed down quite a lot. But quite funny, after 19 hours of being on the service, he tweets, "I forgot to turn off notifications. Twitter sent me an email for each follow, favorite, retweet, and direct message. 47 gigabytes of notifications, lesson learned." But I think my favorite thing about Edward Snowden on Twitter is the fact that he's only following one account, and it's the NSA, who apparently are not following him back.
That's sharp. That's sharp. I love that.
But
no, it's good to see him on Twitter, and it'll be nice to have some direct communications, or seeing some direct communications from him on this.
I think it's going to. I think that America is going to find it very difficult to prosecute this guy if he ever decides to return to America. Because can you imagine the public outrage? If he's incarcerated.
Yeah, I mean, he's single-handedly been responsible, or essentially been responsible for exposing all these things that we're now seeing the downfall of. Or starting to see, I hope.
Hopefully. Anyway. Welcome to Twitter, at Snowden.
Yeah, just remember to turn off your notifications if you are a celebrity or somebody who's going to expect a lot of followers.
Yes, indeed.
47 gigabytes of email notifications. There's a lot of little graphics in there.
Yeah. It's got a big inbox.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, what else is there to talk about this week? LTEC Node.
Or the lack thereof.
Untimely demise. Not surprising, really.
No, I mean, last year when we started speaking, when you had the Boxer test early on, I know you had some objections to some of the things. Well, not objections, but you had some concerns with some of the features and how it worked.
My main concern was it was difficult to use. It was designed by engineers, not by UX experts. Mm. It needed UX experts to get in there and really declutter it. I mean, people don't give much thought to when they're using their DSTVV, for example, about what that user interface looks like. But I can tell you there must be tons of work that goes into making into every little element of that user experience design. And that was sorely lacking on the Node. It was as if it was built for engineers built by engineers for engineers. If you don't mind tinkering a lot and fiddling and going through difficult to understand menus and all sorts of things like that, then sure, I'm sure you would have loved it. But for your average consumer, it was too complicated.
Yeah.
And it wasn't clear what the value proposition was, whether this thing was supposed to be some sort of home automation thing, whether it was supposed to be a video on demand box. It wasn't clear what it was. It was trying to be all things to all men, and in the process, it was nothing to no one.
And they also didn't launch with any of those really awesome sounding and looking accessories that you could plug in, like the cameras, like the home security stuff, and that just wasn't available at launch. It seems like they rushed it out to kind of be part of the race, and in doing so they kind of missed the boat, where they should have probably just held off for a few more months and launched with a full package and a better kind of user interface. And it's a tough market out there. We're seeing a lot of streaming services that don't require a set-top box, and potentially that could have also put people off. I mean, am I buying a DSTV subscription type service, or is this something else? Sad to see these things kind of not making it. But I guess only the strong will survive.
It was also too expensive, and they ended up dropping the price. I mean, it started at $399 just for the box, and then you were expected to make it R299 a month commitment to the service for something that actually lacked content. There was content on there, but it was not nearly the same as the sort of content you get on something like a DSTV or even a DSTV Compact. So it just wasn't fully thought through. And
do you have any idea of the amount of boxes they sold?
Don't know idea. They've never disclosed that. They have said they're going to provide some sort of reimbursement to subscribers who purchased it. I forget the amount. It was some token amount.
Didn't you say 2.5, or didn't I? It's a couple of, or 2.5 or something.
It rings a bell. Yeah, I'd have to look up the story. But it's just another bit of bad news for the Ultron Group, which can't seem to catch a break at the moment. All of its businesses, except for Bytes, the IT business, which is doing very well. The rest of the business is really in the doldrums. Their results are out next week, so it'll be interesting to see just how bad they are. But the share price has absolutely slaughtered over the last 12 months.
Sure.
And of course we've seen Craig Fenter retire, one of the sons of Bill Fenter, and Robbie's still there, but running the group, but talk is that he's going to be moving on quite soon, and they're looking for an external person to take the reins.
Dark days ahead, I guess.
Yeah, the trick is to know when to buy the shares, because it's going to bottom at some point, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And then I think you're going to make
a fortune. You keeping an eye on those then?
I'm watching it very closely. I'm a bit scared of the stock market, but it's currently sitting at R7.25. Depending on what the results look like next week, there could be more downside there before we reach the bottom. And I think we'd probably need news on who's going to take the reins of the group and before there's any sort of turnaround. But as we saw at Telkom when Sipho Maseko took over, it was the share price bottomed, I think, about 3 weeks after he took over. And since then, it's just been going through the roof. It's come back a bit in the last few months, but there was a huge buying opportunity there when they put the new management team in. Mm. And if you're a share watcher, share trader, then there could be an opportunity here soon when the management has changed.
Tech Central hint of the day.
Yes. And if you lose your money, do not sue us.
Disclaimer. Yeah. Cool. But just one more thing on this Ultron. I was thinking about this the other day, and the technology obviously is sound.
It's great tech. The decoder is amazing.
What is happening to them? Are they just parking this in the back room until the day comes where they can resuscitate, or is it a matter of selling it on to somebody else?
They had been talking about selling it. They in fact put out a SEN statement on the JSE saying that they were in negotiations with the company about selling it. Those obviously fell through. Mm. And now they said they're going to retain the IP, but they're not planning to do anything with it for the foreseeable future.
Hopefully somebody's got a plan for it, because I always hate to see good tech just get stored in a room somewhere and never get used.
Yeah. Anyway, cool. Sticking with streaming and video on demand and this sort of thing, I had a fascinating chat last week with a startup from Pretoria called Streamit 360. And quite unlike all the other VOD players we've seen launched in this market, these guys are focusing specifically on live streaming and video on demand sports content. And this is the one area where everyone, is always complaining. You know, VOD services are great, but where's the live sport?
Mm-hmm.
Now, these guys are not going to be offering you the cricket and the rugby, certainly not the major games anyway, because they can't, because those rights have been tied up by SuperSport, part of MultiChoice. But what they are doing is they're having conversations with niche sporting federations. And not so niche as well. I think things like tennis federations, they're working with Cycling South Africa. They did a live stream not so long ago of the Paris Cycling Championships. They've done bodybuilding competitions. They've tennis, a number of other sporting codes. While the founder of this company, Apple's Appleton, says that interesting name, says that there aren't massive audiences for each of these sports. When you put all the sports together, there's a sizable audience. And he says you can do this stuff much cheaper than streaming it live to the web and to mobile, which is their main focus at the moment, than doing a traditional linear broadcast. A fraction of the cost, he says, 1/10 of the cost. And they've got the equipment and they're doing this stuff already. What they do is, for example, one way they do this is if they're following, say, a cycling competition, they'll actually roll out kilometers of fiber along the route back to their outside broadcast van.
Oh, that's cool.
And then they'll just go with their cameras and they'll just follow the action and stream it back to the, send it back to the van and then send it straight out onto the web. They also create virtual studios. This is a good example of one if you go and look at the video on the story. They create a virtual studio. They had Arnold Goetz there interviewing, I think it was in the Paris Cycling, I stand to be corrected, interviewing some of the contestants and that sort of thing. I think it's a great idea, and I don't think it has to be limited to sports either. You could take this to music concerts. You could do this in all sorts of interesting ways.
I'm also almost thinking of it like a public access type setup where, if you have the platform like this, you can, content creators, there are a lot of them out there, and if you can get the right kind of content on here, you've got a really cool solution.
Yeah. I think their back end needs a bit of work in terms of the presentation, the way they do the streams and stuff, but and they're looking for funding at the moment. I think it's a very interesting startup, and I think it has the potential to go a long way. So go check them out.
Yeah.
There's lots of feeds on or videos on YouTube where you can see some of the stuff they've recorded in the past. Just go check out this. Just search for Streamit 360 one word on Tech Central, and you'll find the story on Mr. Apple's Appleton.
Nice. I'm definitely going to check that out.
Cool. Well, I think that wraps up the news for this week. Shall we get on to our winners and losers?
Yeah.
I think our winner this week, I don't know if you saw the story, Rachad, very interesting story about the South Africa moving up 7 places in terms of its competitiveness, according to the latest World Economic Forum's annual competitive report, which looks at 140 countries around the world, and we've moved up from, I think it was 56th to 49th. And it's all, or mostly, attributable to improvements in our internet access in South Africa.
And obviously the fibre that we've seen being rolled out.
Fibre, better mobile broadband, the undersea cables, all of this is has contributed to this. Unfortunately, we're really bad at other things. Like, we're still stone last in the world in terms of science and maths education, 140 out of 140 countries. But in ICT, we've actually helped lift the country, which is fantastic news. And I think that offers all sorts of lessons about what can be done in this country. Mm. A competitive market, largely, left out of, largely without government interference in the market, although government hasn't helped the industry by holding back on spectrum allocation and all the rest of that sort of thing. But a largely healthy and competitive market, which it wasn't a few years ago when Telkom dominated the space and we only had two mobile operators. But it's good news, and I think the telecoms industry deserves a pat on the back for helping push up South Africa's competitiveness. So our telecoms industry broadly is our winner this week.
Yeah, definitely. Well done.
And our loser this week is our Minister of Higher Education and also head of the South African Communist Party, one Bladen Zamande, for some remarks he made this morning about the media industry. He made some comments about diversity in the media, which perhaps have some merit, but I just found it amusing that he then went on to criticize Naspers and MultiChoice specifically for having a monopoly over the pay TV industry. And I just find it amusing that a communist could have a problem with a monopoly. I mean, don't communists believe in monopolies, especially when they control them?
Yeah.
Maybe that's his problem. Maybe he doesn't control the monopoly. He wants to control the media. Anyway, I found it amusing, and I thought his comments were... we all know that Bladen Zamande doesn't like the media. He uses just about every public platform he can get onto to slam journalists and to slam editors and to criticize the media. So I just find it amusing that a dyed-in-the-wool communist, an ideological dinosaur like Dr. Nzamande, can criticize a monopoly given what he believes. Anyway, less said about that.
Yeah.
Probably the better. Anyway, what's your pick this week, Richard?
So, as you know, Duncan, I've been a cord cutter for a few years now, and I love it. I absolutely love not having to. I love getting content directly from.
When
from
you say the cord cutter, you mean satellite cutter?
Satellite cutter. Okay. Well, essentially, I don't have any. Yeah, kind of terrestrial TV or satellite TV coming to my house. So the only way I watch TV is online. Obviously Netflix, YouTube, a little bit of BBC iPlayer.
Right. Which you're supposed to pay a TV license for.
If you're in the UK, right?
Well.
But one of the things, obviously, in being a cord cutter, one of the biggest, and we touched on this earlier, is that you don't get access to sport. And in times of World Cup like we're in now with the Rugby World Cup, you know, you kind of do feel left out if you can't get access to your sport.
Right.
If you're clever, you can Google a few sites and then do some searching, and you'll come across a stream somewhere that somebody's pirating off an international feed. But, you know, if the game's starting, it's always difficult to get that thing up and running quickly. Then, just before the World Cup 2 weeks ago, for the first time, I actually tried ITV Play. And I've heard a lot about this, and a few people have commented online about it being a really trustworthy solution.
Yeah.
So I tried it out. It's free subscription, ITV.com. You go up there, you subscribe, and then essentially when you get to the ITV player, it's similar to BBC iPlayer, where you have three or four channels that you can live channels that you can scroll through and just watch whatever TV reality shows are on there.
ITV is like our ETV. They're a free to air broadcaster in the UK.
And they've got some surprisingly good content on them. I mean, if you look at Downton Abbey, which is an incredibly popular TV show for a certain demographic, it's on there. We don't watch Coronation Street, all those things. But but the thing that I'm obviously focusing on here is the Rugby World Cup.
Sure.
And their coverage of it has been superb. You know, it's been 720p. I didn't get 1080p streams, but it's fine for my TV. And it's been rock solid. You know, I haven't had any problems unless my telecom connection goes down, which fortunately hasn't happened yet. But I'm very impressed, especially if you want to watch the World Cup games.
Mm.
You know, that's certainly the way to go. So that's the ITV player. I can highly recommend it if you want to follow the World Cup and you don't have access to SuperSport.
That's very cool. What VPN are you using to access it?
So I'm using... Oh, yeah, you do need a VPN for this, obviously. I'm using MediaHint.
Oh, MediaHint. Okay, yeah, I use that as well. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, that's great. I did try the ITV player out about a year ago, but I can't watch their regular programming because there's just too much advertising. There's literally 5 minutes of advertising for every 10 minutes of programming.
Yeah.
But I guess with the rugby, it's a live event, so they can't really do that.
Yeah. So I mean, obviously, in halftime you have UK based ads,
yeah.
But you know that doesn't matter. You still get the game, and
yeah,
just as good as the real thing, I guess.
Yeah. So. If you do not have DSTV and want to watch the rugby, go check it out, ITV Player. Cool. My pick this week is actually something we spoke about at the beginning of the show, and that's this Smart Ultra 6 from Vodacom. I'm not going to go rehash it all again because we've spent enough time talking about it, but really is a cool device, and at the price, it's absolutely aggressive. I mean, if you're a budget-conscious consumer looking for a high-end, and this is a high-end device, it's not the top-end, but it is a high-end device, then go check it out. It's pretty good. And because, of course, phones in South Africa can't be locked to networks, according to regulations, you can just go buy this from Vodacom and pop another operator SIM in it if you don't like Vodacom's data pricing.
That's very impressive. Yeah. And let's be honest, I mean, if you look at what most people use phones for, most people don't need the most high-end phone.
Mm.
This one's specs certainly going to be more than sufficient for most people using it.
Yeah.
Especially if you're running your standard fare of apps.
Yeah, for sure. And it's running Android 5.0, so it's not the very latest one. And the only downside I would imagine of this phone is that it may not get
updates.
It may not get updates. Vodacom hasn't said anything publicly on that, but it's a very vanilla sort of Android on here. It's almost, I mean, Vodafone has done almost no customizations to the interface. It looks like vanilla Android. Mm. So it would be relatively easy for them to push out updates. So hopefully they'll come, and hopefully this device will get Marshmallow when it gets released later this year.
I wonder what the hackability of this is. I mean, is it something you can put your own kind of vanilla versions of Android on there, or CyanogenMod or anything like that?
I guess you'd need to find out if it's a... this is sold by Vodafone worldwide, so it's... there's going to be millions of them in the market, so I'm sure CyanogenMod and other custom custom ROMs will become available for it. And it's also made by ZTE, so I wonder if it's based on a particular ZTE handset. And if it is, then maybe that handset, you just need to look out for the details of that handset. I'm not sure. I suspect though it was custom designed for Vodafone. But the fact that it's not just being sold in South Africa, it's being sold around the world in Vodafone markets, I think suggests there's going to be a big enough base of it out there for enthusiasts to start creating custom ROMs for it.
For sure. Mm. Look, I just think it could be a good development platform too for anybody, for any phone developer who wants to develop on Android but can't afford to buy four or five expensive Android devices. Mm. This makes a lot of sense. Again, as an entry level price device. That's not an entry level device.
Yeah, for sure. Excellent. Well, that's our show for this week. As always, if you've got any feedback, please drop us a line. Our email address is info@techcentral.co.za. Until next Friday, from Rechid and myself, cheers.
Ciao.